Benny, you wish any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Can I have 5 minutes?
Yes, sir. You may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Kevin Bailey. I'm from Appomattox, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Robert Blaine Trent. The appellant asked this court to vacate a sentence and remand the matter to the Lynchburg Circuit Court for resentencing. Mr. Trent respectfully submits that his sentence by the trial court was an abuse of discretion, in that his sentence was based on the trial judge's erroneous legal conclusion that he lacked the discretion to run the mandatory minimum sentences concurrently, and that the judge's reasoning for his conclusion was made absolutely clear on the record. Virginia Code Section 18.2374.3C does indeed prescribe a mandatory minimum of either 5 years for a first offense and 10 years for a second or subsequent offense, but this statute does not require the court to impose consecutive mandatory minimum sentences. Now, as you know, there are criminal statutes that do have such language.
If we were to remand,
yes, sir,
the trial judge could give reasons and say, if he cured the problem by saying, I could run these consecutively but choose not to, and gives the exact same sentence, there's no issue.
There's no issue.
Did the trial judge indicate that he would run these concurrently if he could have?
He did not. But he did make statements that suggest that he would consider it. For example, I direct the court's attention to JA 103, I believe it is. And he says, I know that people, and I'm very much aware that we have people that are convicted of murder that don't get 95 years incarceration. I readily acknowledge that that inconsistency exists, but that is not my call. So it's clear that he does not believe he has the discretion.
Well, continuing on to JA 104, is it significant that he says, on the 5 counts of indecent liberties, I'm imposing 5 years of incarceration on each of those. I'm not going to spend any of that time, but I am going to run that time concurrent with the mandatory minimum time because I can.
It's absolutely significant. Completely significant. The Commonwealth's brief states that the judge for prudential matters decided not to do it. He knew the law, he understood the law, but just decided that he didn't want to do it, that it wasn't the right thing to do. But here clearly he says, I can do it here, but I can't do it there. He doesn't say I can't do it, but the inference is that he can't, because he says here I can, because the law allows it. So I think the court is picking up on my argument this morning, and I thank the court for pointing that out. The prosecutor acknowledges at page 6 of their brief that Brown v. Commonwealth, the 2012 case, controls. And again, as I said in her brief, she does not argue that the statute prescribes running sentences concurrently. She just says the court decided, based on his complete and accurate understanding of the law, not to do so. And the trial judge is presumed to know the law. And that, I think, is the issue for the court, is whether there is clear evidence on the record that rebuts that presumption. And so I just take the court to JA 101 through 104. And there are several statements by the trial court that I believe belies the argument of the Commonwealth.
Let me ask you a position. If we agree with your argument on remand, do we remand this simply for resentencing in general, or do we have to put any limits on what the court can change or not change?
Your Honor, I believe that it would be appropriate for the court to remand, and when remanding, the court should be directed to the Brown case, and the Brown case is controlling.
But could the court increase the punishment if we just remand for resentencing?
If the court exercises discretion based on further arguments of counsel and decided that was appropriate, then I think the court could make that call at that time.
I guess it's kind of a moot point given the amount of time that was imposed.
Yes, sir, it would be. And there's nothing to suggest that the court thought that he should receive 440 years. That was the total amount of time he could receive under these statutes. He just gives him 95 years of active incarceration because he thinks that he has to do that. So on remand, once the court's directed to consider the Brown case and, of course, consider your ruling, there'll be a new argument. I will perhaps rehash what I argued at the sentencing, and the Commonwealth will point out things as well. And I will ask the court to consider a sentence within the guideline range, which was around 26 years to 40 years, something like that. But then my argument will be that he give him 10 years. That's the minimum he can give him of active time. But I don't know what the judge will do. He could give him 95 years and say, though I suggested it was a harsh punishment, I think it's the right punishment. And we would have to live with it. And we understood that when we entered these plea agreements. We entered a plea agreement. It was a charging agreement. There were 25 total charges. The Commonwealth agreed to null pros 10 of those charges. The 10 charges that were null pros were under 18.2374.1. We agreed with the Commonwealth to plead guilty to 15 charges. The reason we would not agree to plead guilty to the statute or the charges under 18.2374.1 is because the General Assembly has prescribed concurrent punishments. There was no way that we could have made this argument if we would have pled guilty. We would have been stuck with about 180 years under that, or more even, under that statute. So again, just drawing the court's attention to the statements of the trial court, JA-101, the court says, when the General Assembly fixes a punishment and tells the judge that you must impose a mandatory minimum sentence, then my hands are tied. And the court says his hands are tied three times. And what does that mean? Because we're looking for clear evidence on the record. His hands were tied. He couldn't do it. It's simple. I don't think he really leaves us any guess as to what he meant by that. Page 102, he says, it is my view, it is my belief. So we're about to hear what he thinks of the law. He states that the legislature ties our hands. Judges, ties judges' hands in some cases by using the language that these particular statutes have by including some language I've mentioned before, the mandatory minimum sentence. My hands are tied. On page 9 of the Commonwealth's brief, the Commonwealth argues, and I quote from the brief, after hearing these arguments, the trial judge also acknowledged the relevant case law enabling him to order that the defendant's sentences be served concurrently. But look at JA-102 at what the judge actually says. I do not believe, again, it's his belief, he's stating what he understands the law to be, that I can in good faith, even though a case may say I'm able to do it, I do not believe I'll be honest to my oath as a judge. And there is a case. He doesn't say that the Brown case doesn't say it. He doesn't even say the Brown case. He just says, even if there may be a case, he thinks his hands are tied, that he would not be fair to his oath as a judge. I would submit that the Commonwealth's position argument on that point is specious at best. There is a case. I cited the case to the court at the beginning of my remarks. I provided a memorandum before sentencing and provided that case to the Commonwealth, the Brown case.
When I was looking at the Commonwealth's attorney's argument, it seems to appear, it appears that the Commonwealth attorney was arguing that they could not be run concurrent. Am I correct on that? Or?
No, Your Honor. I would argue that you're not correct. In fact, even the...
You may be very right.
I believe I am, Your Honor. And I would just direct the court's attention. I believe it's page 6 of the Commonwealth's brief. She acknowledges...
No, I'm talking about the Commonwealth attorney at trial.
Well, we can look at the...
looking at page 94 of the appendix, and she made some comment to the effect that the General Assembly didn't... There's no reason for the legislature to use these mandatory minimum words if all they mean is 10 years to 40 years.
I understood that, Your Honor. Look at the bottom part of page 94. She goes on to say, I would contend... The statute's going to be fixed by the legislature, but it hasn't been in this particular statute. And looking over at the bottom of page 95, and even if Brown says you can't, or excuse me, can run them concurrently, Your Honor, today is whether or not you should run there.
Okay, thank you.
And then even the AG's brief concedes that the court can. It doesn't come out and say that, but it doesn't argue that it can't. So it just focuses on whether there's clear evidence that the court was wrong.
You are into your rebuttal. You can reserve the remainder or continue if you wish.
Your Honors, I'd just like to point out a few things on JA 103. The court says, as a judge wearing a robe, I don't have the authority and I don't have the ability to say I'm going to follow what the sentence the General Assembly has set for these offenses when they put it in terms of mandatory minimum for these offenses. So I want to make my position clear. Again, he's already stated what he believed, that his hands were tied, and now he's making his position clear, that I believe that I'm duty-bound to follow the law as set by our legislature. But in not amending this particular statute, the legislature made itself very clear. It amended several statutes and put language that prescribed concurrent punishments. It did not amend this particular statute. And so the legislature spoke. So the judge was wrong. Page 104, Judge Russell's already pointed out the court's statement on 104. I won't mention that again. But he was mistaken in his thinking that he couldn't run the time concurrent. His legal conclusion was that he had no discretion. And I want to say this, and I said this in my opening brief. I said this in my reply brief. I believe it's abundantly clear that the court desired to do what was right. Very clear. I think he spent four pages talking about he wanted to follow the law. He wanted to do what was right. But the court clearly misunderstood Brown. The court clearly misunderstood the subsequent measures enacted by the 2013 Act of Assembly. So we're asking the court to vacate the sentence and remand it. And of course, the court can do what the court will do at that time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Victoria Johnson for the Commonwealth. This court should affirm the sentences in this case because the defendant has not shown clear evidence that the judge was operating under a mistake of law and thereby abused his discretion.
If we disagree with you that the record establishes that, is remand required?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. It would be remand for a new sentencing hearing. I think that was covered in prior argument.
Ms. Johnson, how do you get around, if you would, the judge saying, because I can't?
Well, Your Honor, I think that this case, you don't look at just the isolated statements of the judge. You look at the full context of the record. And here we have the judge acknowledging the Brown case, that there's a case that may say that, but I don't think I can. And then he explains.
Right. It's not because I don't think I will. It's because I don't think I can. And Yarbrough has the line about isolated statements, and it is plural. But from 101 to 104, I don't see any way to read that. How can that be read as not indicating that he doesn't believe he can?
I submit that the court was thinking out loud and explaining how he was applying his discretion.
For 3.5 pages?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the court was stating that, you know, there is the ability to run these concurrent. However, I don't think that I can because the General Assembly, as we argued on brief, cited their intent that there be mandatory minimum sentences in these kinds of crimes and that recidivist offenders be punished more harshly.
How does his statement then, at the end of the 3.5 pages on 104, about the 5 counts of indecent liberties make any sense at all?
Well, I think that he...
I'm running these concurrently because I can. If he had acknowledged that he could for all of the offenses to run them concurrently, how does that statement make any sense at all?
And the court does need to look at the record in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, even in this sentencing context.
And I'm asking you, give me some way to find that doesn't mean what Mr. Bailey has said it means.
I submit that the court was enunciating his belief that these serious crimes should be run consecutively rather than concurrently. And I do note, as was mentioned in earlier argument, that the court never said, as the judge did in Brown, that if I could, I would run all of this concurrently. The judge in Brown expressly said that. Here, we don't have that kind of statement.
Well,
and the judge...
He said, I'm duty-bound to follow my oath, to follow them, even if I may have a personal opinion that differs from the legislature in the setting of what these punishments are. That sounds to me like he disagrees with the mandatory minimum can't run concurrent concept, but he's bound to follow that.
Or it could be read that he disagrees with the imposition of mandatory minimum sentences as a whole, because he talked about his hands were tied as to the mandatory minimum sentences, not the concurrent versus consecutive issue.
And that makes sense if that was all he said, but then we get to the very next, to the quote I just read, where with these that don't have mandatory minimums, I'm going to run them concurrently because I can.
Yes, because they don't have the mandatory minimums.
Well, right.
Is that what he said? That's my recollection. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to ask a question.
No, you're in this context, it's perfectly appropriate. I never have a problem with your demeanor. You're always welcome to ask.
Well,
I may
you.
Not answer. But the because I can, because they don't have mandatory minimums, to me, the only logical way to read that is because with mandatory minimums, I can't, not I won't.
And
that's a problem because, as the Commonwealth freely acknowledges, he could.
He could. And, I submit the record is the record. That's why we don't fix on isolated statements. And I think that this one, I'm going to run the indecent liberties together because I can, but I'm not running these together. I submit that's a fairly isolated statement. And furthermore, I think that when we look at this record as a whole, again, the court did not say that he could not run these concurrently, expressly. He also did not just sentence the defendant to the mandatory minimums, even run consecutively. He doubled that and then suspended the time. So there's not an indication here that he was trying to be as conservative as possible
Ms.
in
Johnson,
sentencing.
You refer to these comments as isolated comments. Can you point to me anything in the court's soliloquy here that suggests to the contrary, that makes these isolated comments?
I believe that he is speaking of, that the record can be read, that the judge is speaking about the existence of the mandatory minimum sentences themselves. I'm looking at page 102. The legislature ties judges' hands in some cases by using this language that these particular statutes have, by including the language I've mentioned before, the mandatory minimum sentences. My hands are tied, and judges' hands are tied as to mandatory minimums.
But he says, if I were to run it concurrent, as the defendant wants me to do, and has been argued very persuasively by Mr. Bailey, mm-hmm. that would no longer be a mandatory minimum. And that's obviously an incorrect statement.
Well,
it doesn't seem to be that isolated, because it seems to occur repetitively
frequently
throughout the soliloquy.
And I think, again, the record is the record. However, I submit that the judge was explaining the reasons that he did not desire to use his discretion to run them concurrently. And on the facts of this case, that's not an unreasonable suggestion. The case, as the prosecutor argued below, did involve vile and heinous acts, numerous vile and heinous acts. I won't go into the record too much, except to note that there was strong evidence, including hundreds of Facebook messages and text messages. The evidence at sentencing was that this individual has psychopathic tendencies, enjoys degrading his victims, and has a predilection for 14 to 17-year-old girls. On even that brief recitation of the facts, this sentence was justified, and it's certainly within the statutory range of sentencing. If the court has questions, I will attempt to answer them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You're off the hook. Mr. Bailey, you've got a few moments remaining if you have any comments.
Just briefly, Your Honor. In review of the record, there is nothing to suggest that the court thought the law allowed concurrent sentences but chose not to do so. You can take an isolated statement and suggest perhaps that he understood the law and was choosing to run the sentences consecutively. But when you look at it all together, it's very harmonious. And for four pages, 101, 102, 103, and 104, he's very clear. He believes his hands are tied. And he says on page 104, and I'll just conclude with this, I'm imposing 5 years of incarceration on each of those. I'm not going to suspend any of that time, but I'm going to run that time concurrent with the other mandatory minimum time because I can. The law does allow me the opportunity to run that portion of the sentence. Since that is not a mandatory minimum, I can run that concurrent with the other mandatory minimum time. So the extent I'm allowed to run time concurrent, I'm running 25 years concurrent with the other. And that fits perfectly together with what he had said before. It's very clear that he was mistaken. And we're asking the court to remand and allow the court to re-sentence him in accordance with standing law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll recounsel our next case. Well, here is Lambert versus Commonwealth.